Hello, Hermanus.
Hey, Davis.
Today, we are starting a new season of Loose Leaf Media.
Hell yes.
And we are starting it off with a new segment that I would, well, you would like to call...
Rom's Rom-Coms.
Rom's Rom-Coms.
Yeah.
So to everybody out there, happy Valentine's Day and happy Black History Month. February, here we go. New season, Loose Leaf Media Podcast. My name is Davis Leaf. I'm here with my co-host...
Romanus Hutchins.
And today is extremely special, not just for all of those reasons, but... What are you making that face for?
Well, I'm waiting to see what you're going to say.
Okay. He was making this weird, like...
An incredulous look.
Incredulous. This face palm, just his mouth was dangling all the way on the floor.
Oh my God.
But today is a very special occasion, not for just the reasons we mentioned, but because we're also in a new venue recording today.
Oh.
And I think it's pretty wonderful.
We're in my apartment.
We are in your apartment for the first time. We are talking.
Which is nice because now Davis doesn't have to leave mid-podcast to yell at kids for playing outside of his window.
That's true.
Yeah.
Actually, I've already taken this place for granted. It's a beautiful apartment, by the way.
Oh,
but
thank you.
I'm taking this place for granted already because I won't have to worry about that. And I probably won't have to worry about any disruptive neighbors. Mm-hmm. Or any knocking at the door.
I kind of miss that, though. That's why I want to eventually move to videotaping us, because there are hijinks like that that happen.
That's true.
That the audience needs to see.
They'll just recognize that I'm always incredibly tense when we're recording for all those reasons.
Well, my favorite one was when there was an ice cream truck that just... it wasn't serving anyone, but it was still just playing in the background.
It was just a drug front.
They're just selling drugs.
There was a trap ice cream truck that used to come around every now and then. And they actually did serve ice cream.
What's a trap ice cream truck?
They just, like, you know, there's graffiti on it and they played trap music. But it was like the typical ice cream jingles, but with like a trap beat over it.
Wait. So, damn.
It was actually sick. I got ice cream from that truck
with And then they're like giving out those SpongeBob ice cream with the bubblegum eyes.
Yeah, pretty much. That was the whole idea. But I got a smoothie. It was terrible. It was a horrible, horrible
smoothie.
What
did you think you were going to get when the ice cream truck driver is listening to Chief Keef?
I don't know.
You were going to get a good smoothie?
I don't know what I was expecting. I was in the moment. I was just chilling out in the patio. They were coming by. It was a nice day out.
Right.
And the ice cream truck driver, they were clearly feeling it. They were enjoying it. I saw them nodding their head. And the woman who was serving the ice cream at the window of the truck was just like waving her hands out. And I was just like, okay, I like this.
I like this.
So like a five-year-old kid, I ran back into my house to grab some cash. Then I rushed out to the ice cream truck.
Right.
And then I spent like 2 minutes looking at all of the pictures on the truck. And I was like, oh, y'all have smoothies. And I was like, yeah, let me get a strawberry smoothie.
All right.
And it was just the most watery, like melted yogurty looking, tasting crap.
That sucks.
Yeah, I felt like it felt very artificial. And but I was like, that was on me.
Again, yeah, exactly. I blame you because what were you expecting?
I don't know. I don't know. I just wanted to, you know, I liked the vibe and I wanted to support. So
did it have like organized, nice graffiti on it where it's like, oh, an artist
like
paints it over.
That
this.
Was the thing. The graffiti seemed intentional.
Okay.
It wasn't like somebody came up to the ice cream van in the middle of the night and just like posted their, you know.
Right. Their tags.
Yeah. their starving art.
It wasn't
it
wasn't a defaced truck.
No, it was an intentionally defaced truck.
You know, the thing that I hate about DC is that I do feel like the food scene is mostly aesthetics. And this is not even just my take. I hear a lot of people talk about this where like a lot of the service industry is really into getting people in, you know, in through
just
the door
in the restaurant.
Right. In the restaurant. Mm-hmm. But then they taste the food or the smoothies in this case. And then they're just unsatisfied, you know?
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, vibes are a big part of the DMV in a lot of ways, where people go out, they just go out to, like, enjoy being out, mm-hmm. not necessarily to do any one specific thing, because mm-hmm. people get into all kinds of shenanigans around here.
Yeah, but if I pay $120 for brunch,
then... Oh, yeah, it should be good brunch.
It should be good.
I would agree with that.
Everybody should. The restaurant should agree with it, but then... at the best, most times it's mediocre. There's only maybe two or three brunch places that I recommend
in DC. You go to a lot of brunch places?
Well, I have.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Expectation?
No, is it good?
It is wonderful.
Where is that?
There actually used to be a location in downtown Silver Spring.
Okay.
They closed down during COVID.
Right.
And then they relocated to a new location in Ellicott City.
We're right around the corner from Ellicott City. Okay.
They got bought out by a different restaurant.
Oh, damn.
And a lot of their menu quality completely switched up and it wasn't as good. And now there is a new one that I went to several months back. I don't particularly remember the location. From here, it might be about like 15, 20 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the same old Expectation at that place.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the best brunch spot that I've ever been to in this area. They got everything. Service is wonderful. The drink selection is massive, top notch. The entree items are phenomenal. All of it is great.
So it's about to be, as we're recording this, it's February 7th, a mm-hmm. week away from Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, DC brunch is really big, especially in the black community. The brunch blacks do exist. I'm probably like one of them at this point. Yeah, just
I actually am too.
Are you?
I love a good like noon time.
God,
like go out get a bunch of you know salty and sweet foods.
Okay, what's the best time for brunch, Davis?
Best time for brunch?
Yeah,
between 11:30 and 12:30. That's what I'm gonna say.
Okay, so I agree with you, but the issue is that there are a ton of black women right now listening to this pod that are going to say, fuck no, 1 to 2.
1 to 2.
That's too late.
That's lunchtime to me. Brunch is over.
Well,
everyone, you know, have your opinion. That's fine. But to me, that's lunchtime.
Well, because to me, let's say if we start brunch at 1 and we end at like 3:30,
mm-hmm.
then I feel like the day is over.
Right?
Like,
I don't like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
3 o'clock is a terrible time of day.
It is.
If you don't feel like you've gotten enough done at that point, you just don't feel like you will at that point. And it's very easy to give up on your day by 3 o'clock.
especially if it's brunch on Sunday. If it's brunch on Sunday, then forget about it. Your day is over.
Don't do it.
Because maybe by 3, you're saying, oh, fuck, like I want to get home and get ready for the work week.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to watch football or whatever. Or do some other
time.
Hobbies.
You want some time.
But I'm sure that we will be heckled eventually.
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, Expectation, this is a solid brunch place. So shout out Expectation. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's looking for a brunch spot,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mind driving a little bit, that lives in, I don't know, the Maryland vicinity. Well, not Maryland. Maryland. I don't know how to describe Montgomery County area.
Yeah, Ellicott City is not too far from me. It's like smack dab in between Baltimore and D.C.
Yeah, the new place it's called Jam Eateries.
Oh, okay.
It's not bad. I feel like I indicated that because it's not Expectation, it's bad now. It's actually still good. I just went in there still expecting the same quality of food.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would necessarily consider it a downgrade, but it's definitely a change in recipes that they're using there.
Right.
And so for that reason, it was just disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a worthy spot. Anytime I've gone to Expectation, anytime, it is always a 20 to 30 minute wait. I don't think they take reservations, but like there is always a line out the door waiting for people waiting.
I do hate waiting. That's why I'm big on reservations.
Mm, I feel that. Especially for the places you know that you're going to be waiting if you don't have a reservation.
I know some places that they just won't be, that you will never be able to sit for brunch time.
It's a hot commodity. Sometimes you got to make a reservation a month in advance.
I have done that for a specific place that I'll tell you later. I don't like telling because
you don't want to share your special spots.
No,
I understand.
You gotta keep some shit close to the vest.
That's real.
You know,
I respect this. You know, speaking of brunch, I do want to point something out that I feel like I've noticed while being in your apartment here.
Yeah,
where's your coffee pot?
I do not possess a coffee pot.
Really?
Really?
So, but you drink coffee.
I've been seen drinking coffee before, yes.
What are you describing, your FBI profile? He was seen drinking coffee. That's the only indication.
From now on, I'm answering questions like I'm being questioned by Congress. I'm on C-SPAN right now.
Okay, you're on C-SPAN?
Yeah, I'm on C-SPAN.
That's fair. This is your hearing,
yeah.
The Congress hearing for yes. If he drinks coffee or doesn't.
And I have been seen drinking coffee, yes.
So how do you, forgive me for asking, because I know not everybody drinks coffee, but how do you function when you get up in the morning for work? Because you get up pretty early.
Yeah, I get up around like 5. And
just no coffee.
I can't remember the last cup of coffee that I drink. Maybe last weekend in New York for just... to say I had coffee at the Seinfeld restaurant.
Real.
Yeah. Like just, you know.
I love you for that.
Oh, I love you. We'll talk about my New York trip later.
We'll get into it.
Because we're already 10 minutes into our pod. But yeah.
I really wanted to bring up the fact that I don't see no coffee pot around here.
Well, yeah. I just, you know what I do? I stretch and I listen to some music and then I'm up for the day. Like, I got it. And then I've learned that just certain times of the day, coffee will wreck me to the point where I won't be able to go to sleep. So anytime after
that's
2,
real.
I can't drink coffee.
That's fair.
Because I'll try to go to bed at, like, 9, between 9 and 10, and then I might be up for, like, an hour, hour and a half, and that will ruin my sleep.
That is the tough thing about drinking coffee is you got to time it right. Otherwise, you're going to mess up your sleep schedule.
But I know people who drink several cups of coffee a day.
That's me.
How many cups would you say you drink?
Dude, I've had 2 cups since I've been here.
And you're off today. You're not working today, and you've had 2 cups of coffee.
It's called a caffeine addiction.
See, I have other vices.
I prefer to be asleep, but I'm also kind of addicted to being awake, if that makes sense.
I prefer to be awake, but I can't stop falling asleep.
And that's where the balance comes in.
Yes, that's why we're buddies.
Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah.
Well, Romanus, what movie are we going to talk about for the first Rom's Rom-Coms?
Well, Davis, I wanted to start by reviewing Love Jones, but for some reason, someone didn't watch the movie.
Mm.
And so, thankfully, I did... suggest another movie that we're eventually going to get to. And I will say that this Rom's Rom-Coms is just one review in a total of 4 that we're doing for Rom's Rom-Coms. Mm-hmm. So the one we'll be doing today is The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm.
Directed by Judd Apatow, starring Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read the summary.
Delighted.
Steve Carell plays Andy Stitzer. Andy, a socially awkward but kind-hearted man, has made it to 40 without ever having sex. When his coworkers discover his secret, they take it upon themselves to help him lose his virginity. As Andy navigates their misguided advice, he meets Trish, a single mother who could be the real deal if he can overcome his fears and insecurities. Davis, how did you feel about The 40-Year-Old Virgin?
Well, I've seen this movie a pretty good handful of times by now. But I rewatched it last night, and I'm actually looking forward to talking about this because I also want to briefly kind of talk about how I feel about Judd Apatow as a filmmaker in general, too.
Let's get into it.
But yesterday I actually watched the unrated version. Remember when those existed?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's like 15 minutes longer.
Yeah.
And Judd Apatow movies are typically pretty long for whatever reason, but I'm watching this movie. It's got like... maybe a little bit more sexuality in it, but it also has a lot more extended versions of dialogue between characters that were throughout the movie, mostly just characters riffing, which is like 80% of this movie. And I think this movie is still flawless, to be totally honest with you. I think that this is a hysterical romantic comedy from start to finish, and I love every second of it.
Yeah, this might be my favorite comedy of all time.
Okay.
And definitely my favorite romantic comedy of all time.
It's going to be up there for me.
Yeah, right? Because
it's so raunchy that like it's hard for me to even just label it as a romantic comedy because it kind of feels like raunch and romance are kind of diametrically opposed to one another. I don't know if I can explain it, but it just doesn't feel like a lot of the crudeness and the crassness that exists in this movie should not be in a film with so much heart that this movie still persists with.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more, but I will say underneath that crassness, because I would say 75% or actually 90% of the movie is jokes, is laughter. It but underneath is. It all is a very sweet and kind-hearted movie, especially, you know, not just the romance between, you know, Steve Carell and Catherine Keener that plays Trish, the single mother that and Steve Carell's character falls in love with, but even the bromance between Andy and his friends, played by Paul Rudd, Romany Malco, and Seth Rogen. I do think that this movie captures male friendships pretty well, and I think that it also captures the social awkwardness of older romances, right? Because
older romances and like getting to know older friends.
Oh my god!
Like, I mean, roughly all the characters in the friend group are kind of in that same age range.
Yeah,
and Andy, you know, he's very insecure, and he feels very alienated from a lot of like social groups, especially at his job, Smart Tech, and him just beginning to acclimate himself to their group. There's obviously a learning curve on how to socialize yourself and how to interact with people that are very, very comfortable in that unit. And it's very realistic watching him kind of overcome those fears. And it's very sweet and wholesome in its center, I think. And throughout all the crudeness of this movie, there's always an underlying sense of sweetness to everything happening.
Yeah.
And it's really nice.
Because Steve Carell, there's a lot of comedies that the main character is the butt of the jokes, or there's a certain relationship that they have with the jokes. Maybe they're the butt of the jokes. Maybe they're constantly making jokes. And I would say there's a fair amount of moments making fun of Steve Carell, but you do cheer for him. He is a sweet guy, and his story of how he just, you know, goes through his life up until his 40s. And he's had moments where he could have had sex, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. And they're all human. They're all relatable. And you just feel for them, because all of us have had awkward moments with, you know, sexual partners or romantic partners or even friendships. And like, it just stacks up for them where opportunities for love and romance just didn't happen.
They just faded away for him.
Yeah.
That was the kind of the first note that I wrote down today, which was that what I like that's almost instantly established about Andy is that he's obviously a very nice guy, but he's also a pretty well put together guy despite his virginity.
Yes.
But his flaws are he is very stubborn and he is a little prideful throughout the movie.
Wow.
Where he's come to really accept this notion about himself, and he is actually going out of his way to make sure it doesn't happen at times. And there's a really nice moment where after he kind of reveals to this new friend group during a game of poker that he's a virgin. And then he comes in to work the next day and some people are kind of hazing him about it, which is, you know, it's pretty mean spirited in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But then he runs out embarrassed and Paul Rudd's character runs after him and he says, "We were just kidding. Nobody cares that you're a virgin." And then he like corners him and then they sit down and they have a really nice, wholesome conversation with one another. And I think that was the moment where I feel like this movie's capturing friendship at this age really well for the first time in this movie, which is your friends are going to, a lot of friends are going to kind of give you a hard time about things that you might not feel the most comfortable talking about when you reveal these things, but it's out of love in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's a tough way to put it, and it's a tightrope to walk, but all of these friends are just giving him a hard time because they care for him and they want to help him. It's all just, it's all coming from a place of love. And I think the movie does a really good job throughout the entirety of the film, really illustrating those points. There's a couple moments in the movie where Andy feels like he shouldn't be spending time with these people, but he starts to come to understand that they just want the best for him.
There's moments for each of them that they all shine as friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it... That's how I genuinely feel about, you know, a lot of male friendships. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think that women make fun of men friendships because they're like, do men really know each other? And the truth is, like, do you really know anybody?
Sure.
And in even in that sort of ambiguity of male friendships, like, are we just playing poker? Are we just cracking jokes? Or mm-hmm. are these relationships really meaningful? Well, Andy is spending a ton of time around these friends,
mm-hmm.
and like they still invite him out to go out, even though he's not mm-hmm. always comfortable. They still take care of him. They give him mostly terrible advice.
Oh yeah,
but like for each of them, there's moments where they're looking out for Andy.
Exactly,
they show that they love him.
It comes to those male friendships, it's kind of all a revelation too.
Yeah,
in the way that sure. Looking on the outside in, it can be kind of hard to understand, like, how men become comfortable with one another and,
yeah.
like, be very revealing
yeah.
with one another. But we do. Mm-hmm. We just kind of, you know, I'm not a psychologist or anything, but we just kind of do it in certain spaces.
Right.
Do it when we feel the most comfortable collectively. And that isn't always going to be in front of a bunch of other people.
Right.
And, like, you know, for example, like, me and you, we're sitting here, we're talking. The minute the mics go off, we're going to be pretty revealing with each other's lives a little bit more than we would on this podcast.
Of course.
But that's because we have a mutual understanding and trust for one another. And we don't always reveal everything about each other because we don't need to. And I think a lot of good platonic relationships benefit from keeping a sort of shred of mystery in those dynamics because, mm-hmm. you know, you reveal your whole self. It's not necessarily out of fear of being judged from this other person. It's just because that you want to keep some of your business to yourself, and everyone has their right to do that. And I think that's like for Andy's kind of points in this movie, it's very understandable why he doesn't want to talk about it in these ways, but his friends see something as a problem that he hasn't quite seen as a problem for himself, which right. is nice for the catharsis of this movie. And it's ultimately about finding love. And the constant argument in this movie is sex without love or sex with love. And what do those concepts look like?
No, yeah, you put it very poetically. I don't even know what to say after that. You're right. At the beginning of the movie, it's not that Andy is down on his luck. Like, he wakes up, he's, you know, decorated his...
He exercises. He makes his own food.
It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Like he dresses well. Mm-hmm. He rides a bike.
He's well
fit.
Groomed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. Like
he's comfortable in his space. He's made it his own.
Yeah.
Despite it being, you know, incredibly geeky.
He has.
But that's his.
It's him. Mm-hmm. He has his hobbies. He has stuff that he values, and he's good at his job.
Exactly.
And
he only continues to advance.
Yes.
At his skill sets and his job throughout this.
Exactly.
I don't know if there's a correlation between him getting closer to his first sexual encounter and him doing better at work in this movie. I don't know if there's a point trying to be made there in the movie, but I don't know. But it's interesting.
You know what I think it is that as he just accidentally becomes more exposed to his coworkers, that human interaction has exposed him in different ways at work. So, mm-hmm.
His confidence is building.
His confidence is building.
He doesn't
up.
Even realize it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning of the movie, if Trish hands him her phone number, he's not gonna try to reach out to her. But by the time that Trish comes in, he's had conversations with women already.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, talked with his buddies. He's been out, so he's more open already to mm-hmm. the idea of a romantic relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this movie is fucking fantastic.
When we kind of get to it is. It's a spectacular movie.
Yeah.
It's very, very well written.
Yeah.
And when we get to the end of this movie, I'll kind of talk about a little bit more about how this movie technically really isn't at its core a movie about sex. It's about love.
Right.
Which is the pinnacle of any good romantic comedy.
It,
the main theme really should just be about love in whatever form that takes.
Yeah.
But the first thing that I kind of want to really get into here is, as great as the script is and as really good as the direction is in this movie,
mm-hmm.
what really props this movie up for me the most is its cast.
Yeah.
The cast, for me, is the standout. And I for a movie that has other good things, this could be seen as just like overlooking all of these good mm-hmm. things. And for a movie, if this movie wasn't as good, the cast wouldn't feel as good either. And there's a lot of movies out there that have a really good cast assembled that are like acting really well, but the writing and direction is not very good. This movie has good writing and direction, and the cast is already so good in this movie and so like A-list driven, maybe not entirely at the time, but it's so elevated. The cast and the performances are so elevated by this good script. And everyone in this movie is really fucking good.
Let me read some names.
Please.
Before we get in too much, because I agree with you. Of course, we have Steve Carell, Paul Rudd, Seth Rogen, Elizabeth Banks, Jane Lynch, Leslie Mann, who is married to Judd Apatow and has been in Knocked Up and This Is 40.
Pretty much all of his movies.
Yeah. Kat Dennings, Jonah Hill, Mindy Kaling, Kevin Hart, Nancy Carell, who's married to Steve Carell.
Nancy Carell?
She was the health clinic counselor that Steve Carell goes with.
That was her. With Kat Dennings.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And she's also been in The Office, too. She's been in a few stuff that he's been in.
Interesting. Romney Malco.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Kevin Hart makes an appearance in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I said Kevin Hart.
Did
you
say Kevin Hart? Yeah,
Kevin
Hart. Yeah.
Kevin Hart is one of the funnier parts. And he is just like.
That whole scene. Like, yeah. So a lot of my notes, to be totally honest, are just a list of my favorite moments in this movie.
We're going to get to that.
There's a lot of great scenes in this
there's
movie.
There's a bunch. We're going to get to that.
I was like, who's the guy that plays? It's their coworker. He's the little Indian guy.
Jerry Bedknob. He as Mooj.
I guess I want to start out with him because he's fucking hilarious.
In the first scene that we see him in, where he is fighting with Rowdy Malco, played as Jay, Andy's black friend, and they're arguing about commission and just the profanity. I don't even want to repeat it, but you have to see this scene.
The crudeness of this movie and the profanity is like. Off the charts of this movie. I love every scene of it, but they're just like, they're arguing about like not getting enough commission one another and trying to balance it out. And then they start getting in each other's faces. I can't remember each lines, but it's so fucking funny because it just ends with them coming to an understanding and then they just hug it out.
I
don't know if that might have just been in the unrated version.
No, it's in the full version.
But they just hug it out and then they go back to work like they didn't just argue like they're about to fucking really square up.
Mooj is he talks about how he has a knife in his shoe and he's like, I'm gonna pull out the knife out of my shoe and it can't be put back unless
it's got blood on it.
It's unless it's spilled blood. Yeah, that's a good one.
Just constant riffing between all of these characters to the point where it's like, I don't know if all of this was actually written in the script or if Judd Apatow was just like, this is the idea of the scene, just go for it, see what comes out. It feels like that constantly throughout this movie where it just constant ad-libs. And I feel like there's not a lot of comedies that are coming out that have this level of hysterity to it.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the comedies that do come out, I don't see this kind of riffing happening anymore. With people, like comedians, just being allowed to be naturally funny and not having to read predetermined funny lines on a page.
Yeah, and in their own ways, right? Like, it's not the same 4 or 5 characters playing the same kind of comedian. Like,
everybody clearly has their own style of comedy that they bring into the table.
Jay is funny black guy. Paul Rudd is like put together, laid back white guy.
Yeah. But super depressed throughout this. Yeah. Like he's just like he can't get over his ex.
Yeah.
Who's Mindy Kaling, and they like broke up 2 years ago, but they were only dating for a small amount of time. And I'm like, this guy's kind of pathetic.
He hates Michael McDonald.
that first line is so good. Just like I came in, I woke up, I thought about it, I came into work, and I said to myself, if you don't take this Michael McDonald video down, I'm going to kill everybody in the store and then put a bullet in my brain. Just like nothing against him. He's a good artist, but if I hear Yamo be there one more time, I'm gonna Yamo burn this place to the ground. Like,
I'd rather hear Fran Drescher for 8 hours straight. Just play anything. There's just tons of moments like that where everyone has time to shine in this movie.
Absolutely.
My favorite scene, just from laughter, I bust out laughing every time I see the scene when Andy is just revealed. It's not that he drops the bomb. they're all talking about sex during the poker game, mm-hmm. and they're like trying to get Andy to say like talk about like just tell us a crazy sex story.
Yeah,
and Andy's he's like yeah,
so
like,
many going through my head.
I, like this one girl, I just like you know felt her breasts and Jay's like what tell me like what
like describe them.
The, and he's like yeah, it just felt like a bag of sand, and everybody's like. What?
They're like, I love the yeah. entire time he's describing it too. You see, it keeps cutting to Paul Rudd's yeah. face, and you see him in disbelief a little more and more with every single cut back to his character.
Because Paul Rudd's character is repeating stuff back out of disbelief. He's like what?
Bag of sand. Like, bag, what are you talking about?
Right and Jay's like, are you gay?
Are you gay?
He's like,
no. Wait, yo, answer this question.
No, no, no. Before yeah, then, okay. My favorite part. He's like, yo, I got friends that fuck guys. There's nothing wrong being gay. I got friends that fuck guys in jail.
In jail. he does that a couple times yeah. in this movie. There's a scene at the end almost that I even want to bring out because Romney Malco's so fucking hysterical
he's
in this
fucking
movie.
Hilarious,
I miss
man.
Seeing him in more movies.
God,
he's
such
really
a good
yeah, he's
actor.
Really, really good in this movie. But there's a moment at the end where Steve Carell is with Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah.
And they're having their time and he's about to, you know, have sex with her and they're both trashed out of their mind. But then he's walking out because he realizes she's kind of like too much for him.
Right.
And then his friends are waiting at the door, just like trying to get him out of there. Mm. And Seth Rogen's just like, well, we came to see if you are all right, but now I could not give a fuck. and then he's like, wait, so how do you guys know where she lived? And then Romney's like, I hit it about 8 months back.
We're describing these friends, and I know we just said that they were good people, but we're
no, they're
that.
They're pretty douchey. They're pretty douchey friends,
well,
but they're guys.
No, Paul Rudd, you know? Actually, his character never has a bad moment with Andy, I feel like.
No, he doesn't, yeah, but like, he's also kind of, you know...
He's jaded.
He's jaded and he's a little pathetic throughout the movie. He goes through a lot of weird emotions throughout this entire movie.
Yes.
And it's like, I feel Seth Rogen at the end of this movie where he's just like, he's taking this stance of abstinence for himself at one point.
Yes.
And or celibacy is what he calls it.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I hired a 90-pound girl who can't lift an iPod to work in the stockroom for you. So go over there and talk to her.
Well, you know, there's they do look out for each other.
They do. Like, they feel like friends. Yeah. Which is like, is you know, crass and kind of douchey as they can be sometimes in this movie, you sense that they're friends and you kind of come to love them as a group of friends.
Well, another example of just them all coming together to be a good, you know, solid friends to Andy is when Andy first meets Trish in mm-hmm. the store that they all work at.
Yeah.
And Trish comes up to the group of them and is like, hey, can any of you guys help me with this? And they're all like, nope, this is
they
for
just,
Andy.
Yep, they just toss him to the wolves.
You know, my bro Andy... He knows everything. He can help you.
Yep.
And there's people that are trying to bother Andy in the background, mm-hmm. and they're like swooping in, like, "Oh nope, like let mm-hmm. Andy be by himself with this lady." Mm-hmm. Like,
those are those moments where it's just like your bro's got you. We're trying to hook you up here.
Yeah.
We're trying to help you get out of your comfort zone and gain some confidence for yourself.
Exactly.
Which I think you know they like him regardless, which I think is the sweetest part of it.
Yes.
But they just want him to be happy. And I think Romney Malco kind of says something like that at one point. When they're in the club, I'm going to get to one of my other favorite scenes in a second.
Okay,
yeah. But when they're in the club in the beginning of the movie, and he's just like, you need to go and roll down some drunk chicks in here. He's just like, I'm not talking about a little tipsy. I'm talking about, you know, broken heel, vomit in the hair, stumbling all around and shit. It's just like every guy has a code embedded in them that just says, tackle drunk bitches. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking
about?
What are you talking about right now? This is what you were saying where they're giving him terrible advice constantly throughout this movie.
Awful advice.
But it's always coming from like a wholesome place, as odd as it sounds.
Well, from his perspective. And the truth is, there's many truths said in jest. There are men that think this way.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like all of these people.
That's why it catches you off guard sometimes in this movie, where it's just like, it's shocking the advice that they're trying to give him right now.
Yeah.
Like, what are you fucking talking about?
Yeah.
And they're all kind of terrible in their own way, especially Romney Malco's character.
He's the worst one by far
because he's like constantly talking about cheating on his girlfriend all the time. And then like when she finally breaks up with him,
my God.
He just like breaks down in the break room in front, and it's you feel like it should be sad, but it's actually really fucking funny.
Yeah.
The way he's breaking down. He's just like, and he's like, so why'd you cheat on her? Because I'm insecure. Can't you tell? Don't ever let go of love, man. You got to hold on to it for dear life. And I'm just like, oh my God.
And you know, all of them besides Seth Rogen is insecure.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like that's the funny revelation by the end of the movie is that he was kind of the most sure of himself in the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up arguably the happiest. He gains $500,000. He, you know, gets to marry the girl of his dreams and just, like, live happily with love now.
Oh, Andy.
Yeah.
Oh, I was talking about Seth Rogen's character.
Oh, Seth. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But no, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Andy is better off by the end of the movie. And it's because he's found this, like, very genuine love. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about the comedy a lot. Let's talk about Andy and Trish.
Okay. Let's talk about it. So that kind of goes to the point I was going to make about the theme of love.
Mm-hmm.
I think Catherine Keener, character of Trish, she is 100% the representation of love in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of emphasized by that final line that he shares with her before he confesses to her that he's a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to spoil for anybody who hasn't seen this movie,
mm-hmm.
but like he kind of says something like, I've just been waiting for you this whole time, and then this whole time I thought there was something wrong with me.
Wow.
And I was like, it's really sweet. It's a really, really sweet ending. Yeah. And it really emphasized to me that it's like, oh, her character is the representation of love and happiness for Andy in a lot of ways in this movie.
Well, yeah.
And just finding that companionship.
Mm-hmm. And she makes a comment how during their first date that he's not the typical guy that she would go for. Mm-hmm. She would usually go for guys that, you know, are not wearing helmets while they're, you know, driving a motorcycle, mm-hmm. and, you know, bad boys, and
mm-hmm.
and Andy is actually riding a bike to work, like
bike to work with a helmet, a
bicycle, and it's got a big red X on the back of the helmet.
She's great though.
She's in
this
wonderful.
Catherine Keener, I've always loved her as an actor, but she is really good in this movie.
And they do look like a really, like, the other thing. There's other romantic comedies that they match the love interest, and it's like this hot model that in real life would never look at the main character. Literally. But
it's like every Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like it actually might be every Adam Sandler movie. Like Grown Ups and...
Oh, God. Really? Exactly. That one pisses me off the most.
What was that one that he did where like he like with Jennifer Aniston, where he makes up his own family
just to
impress Brooklyn Decker?
God, what is that? See, we can't even name him.
And then even fucking Uncut Gems, where he's like, he's dating Julia Fox in that movie. I'm just like, this is every Adam Sandler movie. He's just dating a model.
Even in dramatic movies, he's
still
just
way out
shit.
Of his league.
He's getting away with murder. Hell?
And his ex-wife was Idina Menzel in that movie, too. And it's like, what the fuck is happening right now? But yes, I completely understand your point. Like
they
match each other very well.
They are a good-looking couple.
They are.
And they look like real people.
They look like real people, and they look like a real couple.
Yeah.
That I would see on the street and be like, oh, they look happy.
And she's very, like, pleasant to be around. She's, like, constantly smiling. Mm-hmm. Like, she even...
But she also has a lot of conviction.
Her
character has a lot of conviction.
Yeah.
And she's funny. She's really fucking
funny. She's very funny.
I love, like, one of her first moments in the movie is, like, really fucking hilarious when he tries to call her.
Yeah.
And then she thinks he's a telemarketer, and then she just lays into him.
Yeah. Because, you know, she probably has to deal with that all day, being her, like, private business owner,
that's
right?
True,
so
with,
she.
eBay.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. You already know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, she... The first, you know, romantic scene with them, they're about to have sex,
mm-hmm.
and it's like maybe halfway through the movie, and it's the condom scene, which is
Good
very
Lord.
Famous. Like, Good Andy Lord. Is trying to figure out how to put on a condom, and it just, there's so many different things.
They make the scene last.
Yes.
It's really funny.
Well, because any sort of complication or curiosity that you might have with condoms,
mm-hmm.
it goes through in one scene,
mm-hmm.
and it's hilarious. She's in the bathroom. He, like, blows it up like a balloon animal. Yep. Like, it's like they're snapping, they're breaking. Mm-hmm. He's going through, like, 10 condoms.
I love that moment. He just yells at us, like, is that okay if I use your magnum?
Magnum?
And then she's like, yeah.
And he puts his hand in it, and it goes to his elbow.
Yeah, and then he just starts pretending to be Aquaman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro.
I'm like, bro. even he's about to have sex with this beautiful woman, and he's still thinking
about nerd shit.
so then...
Stay true, Andy.
Stay true, baby. Look what happens when you stay true to yourself. You meet a woman like Catherine Keener. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. And, you marry them, and you probably live happily ever after.
You get
to dance with the entire cast singing... Aquarius.
Exactly.
Which is just an amazing way to end this movie.
It's definitely a Judd Apatow random way to end
it. It's like the first of Judd Apatow ways that he would end a movie, which makes it feel special in that way.
Now, what was I about to say? Yeah, so...
Catherine Keener.
Yeah, so Trish's daughter, her 16-year-old daughter, comes in... Kat Dennings, while they're about to have sex. I completely
forgot she was in this movie.
Yeah, Kat Dennings is in there, mm-hmm. a young Kat Dennings, way before like she had that show.
What's like the sitcom, Two Broke Girls?
Two Broke Girls, yeah, that's what she's really known for. But she's been in like Thor movies and stuff.
Yeah, she's done some Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
That's a movie that I wish I could have on Rom's Rom-Cons, but we might have like one... Man.
That's a good... I haven't seen that in years, though. That's a good one.
That's probably my most underrated movie of all time.
I would be game for revisiting that one. I have not seen that in a long time.
You know what's another great, like, underrated Steve Carell movie? Mm. Seeking Friends at the End of the World. Have you ever seen that?
Is it Natalie Portman that's in that?
No, it's another girl that looks like Natalie Portman that people...
Ooh, Keira Knightley.
It's Keira Knightley.
Because they both played Padme Amidala in Star Wars.
Yes, they did.
Oh my God. I actually have never seen that movie.
That is a movie... That just has a movie that just completely went under the radar, but my God, it's a wonderful movie. Okay. Man. I highly recommend it.
Interesting.
And it's not necessarily a romantic comedy, even though there is comedy that happens, but the premise is that, you know, there's a meteor about to strike the world and the world is going to end in like a week. And there's this guy who, you know, recently got divorced and he meets this young woman and, you know, she sort of unlocks all of, you know, just like, you know, this, just this potential in him where he just decides, you know, it's the end of the world. Like there's this woman that's, you know, a road trip away that I've been meaning to tell her how much I love her. Mm. And, you know, I want to see her before the world ends. Mm-hmm. And so this middle-aged guy and this, like, you know, woman that's maybe 10 years younger than him just go on this road trip. And it is just a great fucking movie.
You've really piqued my interest on this.
Oh, my God. You have to see this movie.
Yeah, I think I will.
Yeah. No, that... But Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, mm-hmm. I definitely... Maybe the last Rom's Rom-Coms episode will just be, like, speed rounds.
Yeah, we can
just
do a collection.
Let's do a collection.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Okay.
You heard it first.
Yeah.
Coming up with ideas live.
Yeah.
Well, not live, recorded. But, you know, you get the idea.
Of course. So,
so Kat Dennings walks
in. Kat Dennings walks in. She's like, disgusting. My mother was about to have sex with this strange man.
Naturally.
And then, of course, like, again, human stuff. You just leave.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to further the embarrassment anymore. Like, exactly. Your date is embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Her daughter's embarrassed. Just leave.
Yep.
And then...
nothing that anybody ever does in this movie feels not only out of character, but just, like, out of the human experience, really.
Yeah.
Like, everything feels very natural in what somebody would actually do or say.
In their romance, it is very... It's just human. It feels like real life where... Yeah, that makes sense. Even the pettiness that you get from Trish's teenage daughter. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're going to be protective of your mother, but in an immature way.
I want to mention, like, my favorite scene in this movie, which actually is kind of like my favorite scene and scene transition in this entire movie. And the scene actually transitions into a scene that I believe is only in the unrated version.
Okay.
Because I do not remember this moment, but it's really funny. But it goes from after they're leaving the sex counselor.
Right.
Steve Carell and Kat Dennings. Yeah. And they're driving in the car. And he, like, revealed that he was a virgin during the counseling session to the entire group just to, like, make Kat Dennings' character feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like she wasn't, you know,
the only virgin in the room.
Ostracized in the room.
Yeah.
And then they're driving back in the car and she's driving and he's just like, I made all that up, you know? And then she's like, no, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool though. And she's just like, so you really are one. He's like, yep, I really am one. Don't tell your mom, though. And she's like, okay, fine, but when are you going to tell her? Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I'm working on it. And it's just like a really, really, really sweet moment.
Yeah.
The, like one of those few moments where he did not feel judged for this whatsoever by this person he's talking to, that he was kind of who was very adversarial towards him up until that point.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. It's a really, really good, culmination from that dynamic and a lot of the experience that Andy has had throughout this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scene transitions right into one of the funniest scenes of dialogue in this entire movie, where mm-hmm. Seth Rogen and Jane Lynch are having a conversation about mm-hmm. weed.
Yeah.
And she's just like, do you got any weed? And mm-hmm. he's just like, yeah, I got some. He's just like, how much do you need? Like, enough for me to just get baked for a week. And he's just like, oh, okay, that's a lot. He's like, well, I'm going on vacation. And he's like, oh, where are you going? Nowhere. I'm just going to stay in my apartment the entire time, but I want to be baked.
Right.
And she's like, oh, sick. So what are you going to do? I don't know. I'll just watch some TV. I think I'm going to rewatch Gandhi. And he's like, Gandhi baked is great. I just always feel so bad, though, because I'd just be sitting there and I'd be smoking. And I get hungry. And then, you know, you're watching Gandhi. So right. It's just like he's in the middle of a hunger strike.
Yeah, there's plenty of moments, human moments, and it's broken up with just random bits of comedy.
Just riffing. But, it always flows together very naturally because the movie never wants you to feel like it's about to teeter into way too dramatic territory.
Right.
Which I think Judd Apatow does a little bit more of that in some of the later films that he would do, like The King of Staten Island
mm-hmm.
or something, where it feels like it's more drama than comedy throughout that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he was able to kind of graduate himself into trying a more deeper and dramatic film like that, or even Funny People.
Oh my God, yes, Funny People.
Yeah. Rather than just going straight comedy with
right,
it.
Right.
And I think this movie at the same time still balances its line of comedy and drama very well, where mm-hmm. it's mostly comedy, but really nice bits of drama where it feels like the drama is the levity from this constant hysteria throughout this entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my favorite moments.
Maybe
my favorite moment in the movie.
And that another significant part of why Andy and Trish fall in love is his relationship with her daughters,
mm-hmm.
which of course, again, it is just things that happen in this movie are just life, right? She's not
very natural.
Take a relationship with a man seriously if he doesn't get along with her daughters.
Exactly.
And so mm-hmm. He immediately,
but he does instantly
with his younger daughter. Absolutely.
Yeah. But even when when Kat Dennings is kind of trying to tease him a little bit or make fun of him, he just banters right back at her, not feeling anything.
Yeah.
And it kind of appeals to her sense of sarcasm a little
bit.
Yeah. And it's nice. You see those little nuances throughout the movie, and the movie does a really good job of illustrating it.
And even going back to when, they're all at the health clinic, and Andy very nicely takes Trish's daughter mm-hmm. to the health clinic to take a seminar about, sex, introductory mm-hmm. to sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, there's comedy in that too, because he's looking at all of the little statues of the male and female reproductive systems. Mm-hmm. And you can anyone else is like, what the fuck is this guy doing? But he is genuinely what is going on?
He's really fascinated.
I'm very fascinated. And then they're all in the room, and it's, fathers with their kids, and Steve Carell with his girlfriend's daughter, mm-hmm. Kat Dennings. And when everyone else is chuckling that Kat Dennings is a virgin, which is crazy, even the adults are chuckling, because mm-hmm. She's a high school girl. But anyway,
literally.
There's
a lot of background characters in pretty much all Judd Apatow movies that are just almost intentionally out of place.
Yeah,
where it's I know we've talked about how human and realistic a lot of this movie feels, but it's never sacrificing an opportunity to be funny for those things.
Well, there's one kid, he's Jewish kid,
the curly hair,
yeah. And he's you got any Magnums? And his dad's sitting right next to him, he's like, you have a small penis,
man. And that ends the scene. And then it's the quick cut to them in the car talking,
but Steve, that's probably the sweetest moment in the movie
mm-hmm.
because Andy isn't forthcoming with his virginity
anybody. Bro.
But to make this young woman feel better about her own virginity, mm-hmm. he will put himself on the line. He'll
fall right on that yes. sword.
He will embarrass mm-hmm. himself. He will put someone else before him.
Yeah. I think it's also kind better. Of like a testament to his confidence building yeah. throughout the movie, too, sure. where he just like... Even in a situation where he could have like kept silent like that, like yeah. maybe even at the start of the movie, he yeah. might have. But now his confidence has been building and he's mm. been kind of coming to terms with that reality for himself. And mm-hmm. since he's been thinking about it so much.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'll reveal this, you know, just to help this kid out right mm-hmm. here. And, you know, even if she believes me or doesn't believe me,
yeah.
she believed me instantly, but he didn't really try to contest it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's really nice. It's a really nice moment.
There's tons of moments in this movie where, yeah, like, it's crass and, like, a lot of people will roll their eyes. And then there's moments like that where you're like, fuck, this mm-hmm. movie just pulls you back in.
It man. Really does.
There
was a moment in the beginning of this movie where I feel like I was going to try and judge it really harshly.
Right.
And there was just, like a couple of scenes where I was noticing, like, editing mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you know me, I focus on a lot of the technical elements in mm-hmm. in this movie. Some comedies I don't really care that much,
mm-hmm.
especially ones that are from like the earlier periods of our life.
Yeah.
Ones today I would probably be honing in on a little bit more just because I feel like not only are comedies just a dying breed of yeah. genre, but the creativity needs to be better now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to pay closer attention to those. But I'm watching this movie and I'm like, actually, I don't care. This movie's so fucking funny,
yeah.
and it's written so well, and the acting is so good.
Yeah,
I'm not paying attention. I stopped paying attention to all that for the next 2 hours after that point, mm-hmm. and it's just great. It's just a great fucking movie.
It's a wonderful movie.
I kind of want to quickly speed round through some of my other favorite scenes that I wrote down.
Let's do it. I have some too.
Okay, and, let's go back and forth.
Okay.
Okay. So number one, the most 2000s era moment for me in this movie. The Leslie Mann scene with them driving
yes.
in the fucking PT Cruiser
yeah.
bumping Missy Elliott.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the most 2005 moment in yeah. this movie for me.
And the hat she's wearing the with the black and white pattern. The
hat. Yeah. It was funny to me is it was like a Missy Elliott style hat yeah. too. And I was just like, yeah. something about the way that this is all thought out was very intentional.
Yeah.
It is fucking hilarious. I loved it. Leslie Mann's like stands out really well in that scene.
Yeah.
She's hilarious just as this drunk girl who yeah. just can't fucking focus on the road. And Andy's just like trying to survive in the passenger seat while she's just like piss ass drunk driving this PT Cruiser.
Well, even at the beginning of the scene where they get in the car, she's like, can you drive? She's like, no, I can't drive. I ride a bike. She's so, okay, like, I'll just drive.
I'll just suck it up.
Yeah. And then they get in the car. And it's like, have you had anything to drink? He's like, no. It's like, oh, breathe into this. And he takes it and he just blows in it. And, you know, it has like all these lights. It's like fail, pass. And he passes. And you realize it's a breathalyzer. And he's like, oh, what'd you make me do that for? And it's like, oh, a judge just recommended it for me.
The judge suggested like, I get one.
She had a DUI and she's been court ordered to not drink at all. And she can't drink. She can't. Oh, it's just terrible. That shit
is so crazy.
It's just.
And then boom.
Yeah.
That scene is just fucking hysterical. And it just all ends with her throwing up a shellfish sandwich on his face in what has to be one of the nastiest scenes that I've ever seen somebody throw up in a movie.
Well, then,
because... It is so genuinely gross out of nowhere.
And Steve Carell plays it so straight, and he asks her, like...
Oh, it was probably my fault. I had that coming. And I'm like, bro!
No, he's too nice.
He's That's such a nice guy.
And he says, did you have a daiquiri? She's like, yeah. It's like, yeah,
I thought you did. Yeah. What the fuck? Oh my god. Did you have a daiquiri today? I did. Yeah, I thought you did. Crazy. Yeah. And then just an instant smash cut to the next scene. The movie does that stuff a lot.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to leave a lot of breathing room for some of the comedic beats in this movie. But they are firing on all cylinders throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
Okay, what was another scene that you
loved? Okay, so this is the next day after his coworkers find out that Andy is a virgin. So he's just coming into work thinking like everything's going to be fine. Like, they're going to forget about it. And then they you just find out that they told everybody in the fucking store. There's coworkers that weren't even at the poker game that know and are making teasing Andy.
Yep.
And Mooj, the older Indian guy.
Oh, like, my God.
It's like, Andy, don't worry, man. Like, there's, you know, it's you're all good. Like,
what are you?
What are you, 25? And Andy's like, I'm 40. And
Mooj's
like,
holy shit, you got to get on that. just the switch up so quickly, just like, I'm 40. Holy shit, man, you gotta get on that.
Oh my God. Just that switch up.
Oh my God.
It's so rapid. This is like, but the thing is, it's like, if I didn't know that, I feel like I would have had the same reaction.
No
shade, Andy. I'm sorry. But like, if I walked around the store thinking you were 25, I'd be like, don't take it so bad. You're gonna be fine.
Yes.
Oh, I'm 40. Oh shit, oh, bro. Fuck. You gotta do something.
Again, like, you're lying. You're lying if you say that isn't one of the first three thoughts that come in your head.
Exactly. When
a person that's 40 years old says they've never had sex.
Yeah, I'd be like, what?
Yes, that's why it's a funny movie. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, what? Huh?
What?
Huh? Man.
And then the fucking details that he goes into after that moment, just like, we can't even say that shit, but he says some fucking graphic shit.
that's what I wanted. We'll talk about that later, it was funny.
I want to mention this. Right when Paul Rudd brings over his box of porn, it's not that scene specifically, but it's another transition moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the moment where he walks out and he's like yelling out into the streets, just like, K-Pet, I don't want your giant box of porn.
Yeah.
And then Andy just puts it in his living room. He walks away. A few seconds go by, and then we see him like slant from behind the corner looking back at it. And then we hear the notes to Lionel Richie's Hello queuing up.
Yeah.
And then a quick cut to Andy just like lighting candles in his room while Lionel Richie is playing. Yep. And he's fucking turning his like family photos in this room around, and he's even turning some of the like the nerdy statues around that he's got. Yep.
He's got white silk pajamas on.
He's got pajamas. He gets under the covers, and I'm just hearing, "Hello, is it me you're looking for?" And I'm just like, "Oh my God." This is like a ritual right now.
Yeah. It is for Andy, man.
It is. And I'm just like, this is so fucking
good for Andy.
And this is like, I actually think he might be playing this song in the background. And it's not just the movie playing this song.
And he turns on the tape and it's Star Wars themed porn. Yep. Like, of course it is.
Yep.
Of course.
Which Seth Rogen and Elizabeth Banks would actually go on to do in the movie one day. Zach and Miri
make a porn. Yep. Mm-hmm. Man. God.
Kind of also a good romantic comedy.
Like, I mean,
at its core,
it's more crass.
It's incredibly graphic,
and it's less romantic than.
But there's a sweet story about like evolving from what is seen as a platonic friendship,
right,
to never wanting to acknowledge the love that you have for this friendship out of safeguarding the friendship.
But dangerous though, because again, Elizabeth Banks is not falling in love with Seth Rogen.
No. There's a joke about that in this movie, too. Yeah. Just like, look at me. I am the ugliest person imaginable, but I get women because I know how to talk to women, which is kind of his thesis to Andy when he's kind of presenting his idea on what'll help him.
Mm.
And on paper, it's a good idea. It's just like, it doesn't matter what I look like. I know how to speak to people.
Sure.
And then he's just like, essentially, start like women only want to talk about themselves.
Yes.
So just answer questions with questions.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, well.
Well, can I say something that might out me as just a dumb guy?
Yes.
It kind of works. And Davis is nodding his head in agreement. And in this movie, even it is played as jokes, right? Like, Elizabeth Banks comes off as, like, kind of ditzy.
And that's the point, too, to really drive home what Seth Rogen is saying.
Yeah. But I gotta be honest, ladies. Yeah, if you're on the guy's side, and you're just asking questions, it you get a decent amount of success by just asking questions and looking engaged.
Mm-hmm. Happy Valentine's certain point. Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, ladies. Oh yeah.
But anyway,
I feel the romance in the air.
Yeah, I can too.
uh,
Bromance,
yes. Now,
what other scenes? You got another scene?
I'm trying to think, because like you, I've seen this movie a ton of times. So the speed dating scene is hilarious. Oh my god,
the speed dating, bro.
But, okay.
Classic moment.
It's classic, but there's one scene after the speed dating scene.
Okay.
When Jay's girlfriend finds his speed dating card. Because Jay has a girlfriend that he's in a quote-unquote committed relationship with. But he's still... He's cheating.
What do they describe it as? Just like, it's like a unspoken agreement. Yeah, it's literally an unspoken agreement.
Don't tell your girl. Yeah, and Jay goes to the speed dating trip with his buddies and Andy, and Jay goes as Dr. Montabom or whatever.
Oh my god!
And you know, these speed dating events, you have a speed dating card, mm-hmm. and where you write down notes about the people that you're speed dating, mm-hmm. and the next day after they're done speed dating. Jay's girlfriend finds a speed dating card, and Jay, I guess, tells his angry girlfriend, that it's actually Andy's card, and he was holding it for Andy. Jay's girlfriend goes to their job and confronts Andy, and Andy is looking at Jay. Jay's hiding behind his angry girlfriend, and she's reading the card. It's like, you wrote this, you sick son of a bitch.
Outlandish.
And she's like, I went to, it's all mine. She's like, so you wrote, she's hurting for a squirting.
Oh my God.
And Andy's like, and just agreeing all this shit.
So you wrote, hoe for show. Oh yeah, yeah, I know that one. She was a hoe.
Oh, faux show.
Like, this shit coming out of Steve Carell's mouth hilarious. Is just what makes it so outlandish.
It's amazing. It's crazy. Then Steve Carell starts talking in, like, black scent.
Yep.
You know?
It's like, who the fuck are you to put me on trial? I never even met you. You better control your bitch here, man. You better. And he's just like, whoa, I can't have you talking about my one. Hey, man. Hey, bitch is running wild.
And Steve Carell just shrugs.
And then that's the way it is.
But
then it's another crazy smash cut to the next scene.
Yes.
Of fucking Paul Rudd in the background just having a meltdown.
Paul Rudd, you see his bare ass in this movie.
At first I was just like, is that really...
That's Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd showing his ass, and then like it actually turned out to be that. And I was like, oh shit.
Well, it doesn't even matter. He just... turns around and you see his ass, and Seth Rogen pulls up his Paul Rudd's boxers.
Insane shit. I want to mention one line that, for whatever reason, made me really laugh in this movie, and it's when Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd are over at Steve Carell's place, and they're all talking, and Seth Rogen is trying to convince him to kind of like get rid of all of his unboxed action figures that he has posted around the apartment.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you got to do something about this. Is that the $6 million man's boss? He's just like, yeah. Why do you have that? Just like the steadfast reaction of just like, I see a lot of shit in here, but why the fuck do you have an action figure of the $6 million man's boss?
Well, there's a limit, right? Like, Andy, I could say, if I had a guy friend that had this amount of shit, if it was just in one room, I'd be like, okay, like, this, you have all your collections.
His whole apartment.
He has it in his fucking bathroom. Mm-hmm. He has action figures in his kitchen, bathroom. Like, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
During
like one of the final confrontation scenes between Trish and Andy at the end,
yes,
where you know they're remaining abstinent for like 20 dates or something, because Andy's too afraid to tell her that he's a virgin, and when they're finally you know at that 20th date and they're about to have sex again, like they accidentally knock over a couple of the action figures that they're packing up, and Andy gets very concerned and like, you know, deviates his attention back to like picking up the action figures when, you know, she's just like throwing herself at him, which she says.
Yeah.
And it's actually really sad. It's a really sad moment. It's like one of the sadder moments in this movie to me, because Andy's just like so passionate about these things, but he's just too afraid to tell her that he's a virgin.
Yeah.
And then she literally at one point says, I don't want to change you. I'm just trying to help you grow up. And this is like, it's harsh, but she does have a point at that point too. Well,
and, you know, we can even go further. Like, in that moment, like, somehow it comes up that, like, you know, yeah, she has kids. And he was like, no, I love it. I love that you're a grandmother. Yeah. I think it's sexy. And then it turns out, like, yeah, like, you know what? She's insecure about that too. Because, yeah, mm-hmm. she's technically a grandmother, but, mm-hmm. like, she's still, you know, around her 40s, so exactly. there's still a lot of life to live, but it's mm-hmm. an insecurity for, you know, older women that maybe they won't find love mm-hmm. Unless they're 25 or even younger, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have friends that even when they were 25, they're like, I'm not married yet, what the fuck is wrong with me? And I'm like, what? That's crazy.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Are these friends married?
No, not now, okay. but like, wait, why?
I don't know. I'm just like
out of curiosity.
I was just like wondering, maybe, just like who would be them to judge?
That? Maybe. Oh no, but I'm saying like they're not judging me for not being married. They're saying that for them when they were 25, they felt bad for not being married.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I was confused.
No, it's all good.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, I don't care. I'm not married.
Yeah, I was like, gonna say, it's just like who of your 25 year old friends are judging you for not? I mean, being married?
You know what? If I had a friend that was 25 years old and he's a guy and he's getting married, I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like,
low key though. Like, low key. I think the reverse version of that
it's reverse.
Makes more sense.
Honestly, 35 is when you kind of start getting like the side eye for a guy.
I think a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, you're definitely. Like, oof.
For not getting married, not having kids by that point.
Oh,
you start getting a lot of questions like, when is this going to happen? When is it going to happen?
You know, I have a friend that's 50 and he had a kid when he was 45. So it's not too late.
It's not too late.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Do you. I mean, you know, there is a ticking clock for like women though, too, where they feel like they have to.
Well,
have kids at a certain point.
There's still adoption and you can freeze your eggs and, you know. And that doesn't mean that you won't find love, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, having kids biologically is one facet of life, but you can still find romance at whatever age.
Absolutely. And I think that might be the ultimate theme of this movie.
Yeah.
You can still find romance, love, and sex at whatever age you want to.
Exactly. And not
it being an adult, of course.
We're talking to you, R. Kelly. No, I'm okay.
No, yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. Anyway,
on Black History Month.
This pod kind of went off the rails, but let's bring it
talking back. Talking to you too, Kanye.
Oh, damn. You know, did you see his tweets?
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying this shit.
I was scrolling through it. I was like, fucking, let me just put this down.
He's doing it again.
But he is mentally ill.
Yeah, but, you know, this is like an every 2 to 3 year thing that he does. And it's probably always one of the more entertaining moments of Twitter's existence.
When
Kanye starts to go on his 24 to 48 hour Twitter rants. So he's back.
His wife was naked at the
I saw that
Grammys.
Too, and it was super strange.
It is odd.
I was just like, bro, why does this is all too him coded to the point where I'm like, I feel like somebody should get her the fuck out of there.
I mean, eventually some intervention will happen. Either he find a new white woman or she will leave.
Yeah, I think the latter is definitely likely, but I'm just like, I don't think an intervention is going to come for him.
He's got too much money.
Much money and too much arrogance.
At the only his mother really was the saving grace that he had that could snap him back. But there's one
Donda
that he respects.
Had to go and pass away.
Yeah.
And at least we got Ida White's in heartbreak because of it.
Great.
It's a good album.
I'm going to let you decide if you want to edit that out or not.
No, I mean, I still like Kanye's music up to a point, but God, I would pay money to smack him in the face.
And I don't like anything after Devil in a Blue Dress. Which album is that? Or Devil in a New Dress?
Yeah, that's Twisted Fantasy.
Yeah, anything after that.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Yeah. I kind of have a soft spot for Yeezus for its experimentation.
Sure.
But I think that's the last truly great Kanye album.
Mm-hmm.
After that point, I think it was clearly downhill, where every album got consistently worse after that point.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Kanye, shut the fuck up. Just stop, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but back to
40-year-old virgin.
Yeah, like, just the ending not the ending scene, but just the moment of conflict between Andy and Trish, you get a feeling that they both have their insecurities, mm-hmm. and they're both really trying to find love. They're really trying to make this work. And they did go on this 20-date hiatus mm-hmm. of sex where they promised each other, okay, not going to have sex until 20 dates. And it's a montage where, you know, he's cooking for her family mm-hmm. and they're having great, you know, bonding time. Like, you know, he's gifting her daughter's action figures mm-hmm. and she's going on bike rides with him. So there is a lot of, you know, incorporation, not just, you know, romantically, but just their lives.
Of course.
And they're both just, you know, tender-hearted people trying to make things work, trying to understand each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the end of the movie, you see that and you're rooting for them. And
Very much so.
It's a genuine love story.
It really is.
That I couldn't recommend more. You have to see this movie.
I agree. I mean, some people aren't going to love a lot of the crudeness mm-hmm. that exists in this movie, and that's understandable and okay, because mm-hmm. there is a lot of profanity. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more nudity than I remembered in this movie as well.
Well, you watched the uncensored version.
That's true. There was a lot of that yeah. in there. But
Stormy Daniels is in.
I know. I noticed that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, huh, interesting. Yeah. And weirdly, they make a reference to The Apprentice in this movie, too.
Yes, they do.
I don't know what
this movie was ahead of its time.
This movie was trying to tell us something. Yeah.
No.
And it wasn't Find Love. It was Don't Elect This Man President.
Well, we fucked up.
Yeah, we really did. We learned nothing 20 years later.
I think that, regardless, this is a genuine, for a lot of romantic comedies, they're definitely advertised towards women. And mm-hmm. so the barrier to entry for men is kind of steep.
It's very slim.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that this is a great movie, great guy movie, where the perfect guy movie for the perfect romantic comedy for guys.
I would agree.
Because it definitely has very just out there humor mm-hmm. that is, you know, just, you're gonna love.
Absolutely.
You could watch with your buddies, but then it does have a romance that, man, I wish everybody could experience. You know, people mm-hmm. that you can be, you know, your authentic self with.
Absolutely.
Trish saw that Andy was a nice guy mm-hmm. and then saw the action figures. Like, okay, like, this is just, you know, this, of course, like, he's a quirky guy, mm-hmm. but, like, he's nice, and mm-hmm. I like him a lot, and he's sweet, and he's sweet to my kids.
Of course.
You know, like.
And that's real. That's very genuine from this movie.
It's genuine.
Just like, again, as crass as this movie can be, the sincerity is always there.
Yes.
Almost nothing in this movie feels truly unrealistic.
No. Like, there's comedy.
It plays it very straight.
Right, yeah. There's comedic set pieces where it's like, you know, the speed dating scene where a woman's nipple is like popping out every time she's laughing, and he's just like looking. So there's stuff that
I hated, you know, that they mentioned also that they were from Minnesota.
At the
beginning of that too.
Yeah,
and I was just like, something about this personality really does feel very Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, man. Then it is. It's 40-Year-Old Virgin was a documentary.
This movie's kind of, it is flawless to me.
Yeah.
I think every scene is just perfect, and I don't think that, for as long as it is, I don't think there's any real fat that needed to be trimmed off of this movie.
When trying to describe the human condition, it is perfect.
And just to kind of maybe wrap things up a little bit, I'm not going to go too in-depth about Judd Apatow, but mm-hmm. I generally like his movies. Mm-hmm. I think he has been a pretty consistent filmmaker in exploring the human condition and very often romance mm-hmm. in a lot of his films, because most of his movies that he wrote and directed are romantic comedies in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And this is one of my favorites of his, for sure.
Yeah.
My personal favorite might be This Is 40.
This Is 40 is a great romantic comedy.
Highly underrated in his filmography. I think a lot of people didn't like it as much because they expected a direct sequel to Knocked Up. Mm-hmm. It's more of like a spiritual sequel that's mm-hmm. just featuring two supporting characters from that movie as the main characters.
Well, there's a reason why Knocked Up never got a sequel.
Was it
the
Katherine Heigl?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she shat on the movie Knocked Up publicly with Seth Rogen.
I've heard about that.
And it just put such a bad taste in Judd Apatow's mm-hmm. mouth that
he didn't want to work with her. Yeah.
No, and mm-hmm. she's most famous for Grey's Anatomy.
She in that show?
Yeah.
I've never seen Grey's Anatomy.
Well, she's in it, and she plays a pretty prominent role She's like Gray's best friend, I guess. I haven't seen
Gray's the name of a character.
Oh God.
I don't know. I never knew what that. All the, I mean, I knew, all the I knew women, the show was a medical drama, but like
all the women just.
I knew Patrick Dempsey was in that show.
Oh, so you know Patrick Dempsey's there, but you don't know, just Patrick Dempsey, huh?
He's the only actor that I know is from that show. Okay. But I'm pretty sure I knew who Patrick Dempsey was before that show existed.
Right.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Okay.
I've never seen Grey's Anatomy. I've barely even seen ER, though. So.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen ER.
I should watch ER.
Why?
I've heard it's fantastic.
I don't really
It was one of those shows back in the day that was like the show to be watching.
Wasn't George Clooney in ER?
I think he was in like the first several seasons. First few seasons, right? You think that was where he got his big start. But, but I like This Is 40. That's probably my favorite. I do love Knocked Up. Knocked Up is terrific.
Knocked Up is awesome.
Funny People.
Funny People.
He's really fucking great. I love
Funny People, man.
That's really good.
Super Bad.
That's not Judd Apatow.
He produced it.
He produced that. Yeah, but he produced a lot of comedies from that time. Yes. Like Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
Which is also fantastic. Yeah. That's another good romantic comedy.
That era of comedy, we were like that for us specifically. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, kids becoming teenagers. Yeah. I remember when Superbad came out. Like I must have been 13. Mm-hmm. Huge deal for our generation. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that movie with my cousins every day. Yeah. We would watch MTV and watch Superbad.
That was a movie that I'd never seen a movie like that when I first saw it.
Yeah,
and it's funny because it's a 2007 movie with a very 80s style to it, even though it still takes place in 2007.
Yeah,
but it's like, I don't know, like the disco style music that's presented in the movie, even the clothes of the movie.
They're old school.
Exactly. Yeah. But like they kind of, there's a moment in that movie where they have to wear like Evan's dad's clothes, so they just naturally look very 80s. Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's that movie's also flawless to me.
No, I do miss the Judd Apatow produced, directed era of comedy.
I feel that.
And he, you know, Seth Rogen, even like Pineapple Express.
Oh, yeah. Pineapple Express.
This is the End.
This is the End is like one of my all time favorite comedies.
Yeah.
I love comedies that make fun of the film industry.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill, yeah. I didn't even realize that was him at one point in the movie, too. But he's the guy that tries to buy the shoes from the stores. It's like, I don't know why you won't let me buy these. You're making this really difficult. Yeah. I just want to take these shoes home with me so I can wear them.
Yeah. No, it's just Michael Cera, too. Mm-hmm. James Franco.
Yeah.
Like, just that era of comedy I miss. Yeah. I miss severely.
Yeah. And what's so great about the cast of 40-Year-Old Virgin is like a large majority of them have gone on to do some pretty spectacular things in the industry.
Yeah, Jonah Hill, and he's really knocked it out with in the last 10 years for his career.
Yeah, he's taken off a lot. Mm. Steve Carell is like a 2-time Oscar-nominated actor now.
Exactly, yeah, forget about it.
Obviously, Catherine Keener has always continued to be popping somewhere. Mm-hmm. She's always doing great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Rudd became Ant-Man.
Yeah. Kevin Hart is
Kevin Hart's one of the biggest comedians in the world.
He probably is the biggest comedian in the world.
Yeah, he became the biggest comedian in the world.
Yeah. You know what? There was one year where, like, top two touring artists that were just the wealthiest and, you know, the most successful touring artists in the world... Rolling Stones, Kevin Hart.
That doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
Right,
I've seen almost every stand up from him, and like each one of them has gotten bigger and bigger. And I'd never seen a stand up comedian perform in a football stadium before until I saw Kevin Hart do it.
Well, he does have just incredible amount of success, and I remember watching him as a kid. He was in a ton of movies, man.
He was working constantly.
He's had a really long stretch.
Him too. Yeah. I mean Seth Rogen would go on to define a lot of different style. Well,
oh yeah,
a style of comedy that really didn't exist that much before he came along.
Uh-huh.
And it took over like a whole decade essentially.
It definitely was a new age, like stoner comedy.
Yeah.
You know,
very new age.
Not Cheech and Chong. No. You know, but just like Californian.
Yeah.
You know, zany. Yeah.
It's great stuff. 40-Year-Old Virgin. Awesome movie.
Awesome movie.
Pretty flawless in my opinion. And worth a rewatch or a first time watch for anybody around Valentine's Day here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
And if you are excited by Rom's Rom-Coms, tune in for next week where we will talk about Love Jones.
Can't wait.
Oh, sure, you can't.
I really can't.
Yeah, that's why you didn't watch the movie this week.
Got a lot going on.
Ah, sure you do.
I do.
Sounds like excuses.
I watched this movie at 1 a.m. last night.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, because, so you were more excited about 40-Year-Old Virgin, a movie you already saw.
Maybe.
Have you ever seen Love Jones?
I haven't seen Love Jones.
It will shock you how good it is.
Okay, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'll watch it over the next week.
I think, by my estimation, the best romantic black movie. Not
what a preface.
Not romantic comedy black movie. Best romantic black movie.
I'm excited.
You should be.
I am very excited now. Mm-hmm. You got me real excited. Mm-hmm. Maybe too excited.
Well, on Valentine's Day.
I know.
Anyway.
We're getting there.
Well, that was Rom's Rom-Com's first review. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I am here with Davis Leaf, my co-host.
Hello.
And I've never gone by Rom. It's usually just Ro.
Rom, Ro.
Who cares?
Ro, Rom.
Whatever.
They both work, I think.
Whatever. You close it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know what you're doing right now?
No. These are, whatever.
Well, this has been the first of Ron's Rom-Coms on Loose Leaf Media. My name is Davis Leaf. Did this with my co-host,
Rom.
And we will see you guys on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.